recording. Okay. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rant Show. I got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And I've got Invader Tech and Lurker and whoever else decides to pop in. We're actually in Drex's server right now, so anything can happen. People don't know we're doing anything live, so we'll see. But usually they're cool when we do live stuff. Like they're like, okay, yeah, I don't mind that I'm online and like, oh, maybe 100 people will hear me. Yeah, I know my shows aren't that big, but I still like to do them because it's a tradition and I've done them for many, many years now, so I don't see a reason to stop. All right,
it
so
is in Los Angeles, she could just be Latina.
So we gotta okay. We gotta go all the way back. Oh, holy
never
shit.
Never mind, that does look a little manly. But you know, rotten.
Okay,
eggs.
So we're gonna start with not the bee. Huh. Why is Discord asking me if I should trust links? I don't know, that's weird. They didn't used to do that. Anyway, the media says Sound of Freedom is based on QAnon conspiracies. But when the real-life sting depicted in the movie took place, they applauded it. What changed? Oh, I think I covered this one with Revy. So, yeah, hold on. Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, we did cover that with Revy. We covered the transgender woman that won Miss Netherlands. Alright, here we go. This one from Invader Tech, actually. If you guys didn't know, Microsoft won the bid to buy Activision. Or, yeah, it was Activision, wasn't it? If the Verge loads...
Yeah, Activision Blizzard and King, a.k.a. Candy Crush, is developer.
Hold on. It's saying the site's DNS. Hold on, give it a minute. Sometimes it does this crap. So, okay, here it goes. Microsoft wins FTC fight to buy Activision Blizzard. FTC versus Microsoft is over, and the judge has decided to deny the FTC's preliminary injunction request. California judge is allowing Microsoft to close its acquisition of Activision Blizzard after 5 days of grueling testimony.
Sorry, had to be done.
Of grueling testimony. Microsoft still faces an ongoing antitrust case by the Federal Trade Commission, but Judge Jacqueline Scott Corley has listened to arguments from both the FTC and Microsoft and decided to deny the regulator's request for a preliminary injunction. In a ruling submitted today, Corley said the following. Microsoft's acquisition of Activision has been described as the largest in tech history. It deserves scrutiny. That scrutiny has paid off. Microsoft has committed in writing, in public, and in court to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation for 10 years on parity with Xbox. It made an agreement with Nintendo to bring Call of Duty to Switch. And it entered several agreements to the first... it entered several agreements to, for the first time, bring Activision's content to several cloud gaming services. This court's responsibility in this case is narrow. It is to decide if, notwithstanding these current circumstances, the merger should be halted, perhaps even terminated, pending resolution of the FTC administrative action. For the reasons explained, the court finds the FTC has not shown a likelihood it would prevail on its claim this particular vertical merger in this specific industry may substantially lessen competition. To the contrary, the record evidence points to more consumer access to Call of Duty and other Activision content. The motion for a preliminary injunction is therefore denied. Corley has clearly sided with Microsoft on its commitments to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation and even extend it to Switch. Despite the FTC challenging Microsoft's cloud agreements, Corley took them into consideration in her decision. The court ruling even agrees with Microsoft in theory about the Nintendo Switch being part of the console market, but also accepts that the FTC can reasonably claim it's not. Corley has also agreed with the FTC that the console market does not include PCs. I can agree with that. In a statement following Judge Corley's decision, Microsoft President Brad Smith said the company was grateful to the court in San Francisco for this quick and thorough decision and hope other jurisdictions will continue working towards a timely resolution. Xbox head Phil Spencer, a key witness in the trial, also tweeted a reaction. We're grateful to the court for swiftly deciding in our favor. The evidence showed the Activision Blizzard deal is good for the industry, and the FTC's claims about console switching, multi-game subscription services, and cloud don't reflect the realities of the gaming market, said Spencer. Activision Blizzard has also reacted to the decision. Our merger will benefit consumers and workers, Bobby Kotick, Activision Blizzard CEO, said in a statement. It will enable competition rather than allow entrenched market leaders to continue to dominate our rapidly growing industry. In a statement, FTC spokesperson Douglas Farrar said the FTC was still planning its next move. We are disappointed in this outcome, given the clear threat that this merger poses to open competition in cloud gaming, subscription services, and consoles. In the coming days, we'll be announcing our next step to continue our fight to preserve competition and protect consumers, said Farrar. The judge's ruling now allows Microsoft to close the Activision Blizzard deal ahead of the July 18th deadline, but only if the company is willing to close around the UK or if the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA, is willing to negotiate some form of remedy. The UK regulator moved to block Microsoft's proposed acquisition in April, and Microsoft is currently appealing that decision with a hearing set to start on July 28th. So, okay. Let's see. The FTC will now have the chance to appeal Judge Corley's decision ahead of 11:59 p.m. PT on July 14th. But the regulator didn't appeal a court's decision permitting Meta to acquire Within, so it may abandon its case against Microsoft and Activision Blizzard instead. So, I think pretty much the FTC is fucked. It's way past the 14th, and the deal has gone through. So, Microsoft owns Activision Blizzard for good now. So, do you think this could be a good thing or a bad thing, Tack?
Time to really tell.
I think that they're only saying that they'll leave it on PlayStation for 10 years is kind of crooked because they're already on Microsoft.
Breaking news.
What happened?
It's not done yet.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay, hold on. I just got a new... Tag me. You're in voice text, but that's okay. All right, I'll read this then. We have an update from Reuters. Reuters is a very trusted site. Microsoft Activision urge U.S. to drop case against deal before internal FTC judge. Holy moly. Microsoft, which is seeking to wrap up its acquisition of game maker Activision Blizzard, urged the U.S. Federal Trade Commission to withdraw a case against the deal that the agency had brought before an internal FTC judge, according to a motion posted to the FTC's website on Wednesday. Microsoft and Activision on Wednesday extended the deadline for the close of their $69 billion deal by 3 months to October 18th as the American companies worked to secure British approval for the biggest gaming deal in history. In Washington, the FTC has been pursuing a two-pronged attack against the proposed transaction. One was in the district court. Hold on. That was probably not supposed to... Okay. That was... If there was any talking in that, that was from a very, very old... I just left my thing on when there was a mic. So, if anybody heard anything for 2 seconds, yeah, just pretend you didn't. But we're good now. All right, so, back to the article. In Washington, the FTC has been pursuing a two-pronged attack against the proposed transaction. One was in district court, which refused last week to slap a preliminary injunction on the proposed transaction. An appeals court could also turn down a request for the deal to be paused. The second is before an FTC administrative law judge, where a trial is to begin on August the 2nd. It was this prong that the companies asked the agency to withdraw. Withdrawal from adjudication, is not only mandatory, but is in the public interest. The district court had a full opportunity to consider the FTC's claims and found that the commission was unlikely to succeed on the merits of those claims for multiple, independently sufficient reasons, the company said in the motion. The FTC did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Reporting, okay, we don't need all that. But that's all, that's what we have as far as an update.
So and then I found an update to the update.
Wow, there's an update to the update. Isn't this the same article I just looked at? No.
No, this is a different... This one was from 5 hours ago.
Okay. Now the FTC has withdrawn its in-house challenge to Microsoft's Activision Blizzard deal. The in-house case was set to go before a judge in August and could be refiled in the future. The FTC is suspending its administrative challenge seeking to block Microsoft from buying Activision Blizzard. The FTC had taken a two-pronged approach against the $68.7 billion deal filling this case last December that was scheduled to go before its own administrative judge on August the 2nd. The other part was its pursuit of a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction that would have stopped Microsoft closing its deal while the FTC's administrative process continued. U.S. federal judge denied the injunction request earlier this month, and an appeals court also turned down its request to put an emergency hold on the deal. The FTC is still appealing the preliminary injunction denial, though. Microsoft and Activision Blizzard still haven't completed the acquisition yet. That's of today. And recently announced an extension of their mutually agreed deadline until October 18th. The show will release... What you're seeing is being recorded the day before this releases. So this will still be relevant tomorrow when you guys see the show. Which will probably be what? Today is the 20th. No, tomorrow will be the 21st. So when this goes up on the 21st,
yeah.
They still have not completed the acquisition yet. I don't know what the fuck's going on, but they are really making this hard. They are really, really making this hard for Microsoft and Activision Blizzard.
Yes, they are.
And remember, now they have an extension until October the 18th. And the FTC could refile the challenge, all while Microsoft continues to negotiate with the UK CMA. Damn! As we noted earlier this week, there are signs that things may not take that longer. May not take that long. Xbox head Phil Spencer told employees that the two companies remain optimistic that we'll get our acquisition over the finish line. Good God almighty, they are pushing this. They really, really, really do not want these people to... Really, really, really do not want this deal to go through and these people to maybe fix Call of Duty. I mean, Call of Duty, I've heard, is not as good as it used to be. Everybody that's playing it tells me they'd rather see Black Ops and all these other games that Call of Duty was big with. So, now we got another article. Do you know who the fuck I am? I'm the mayor. Georgia homeowner reveals bizarre standoff with city's mayor after finding him inside his lake house at 6 in the morning before he was arrested on burglary and trespassing charges. A Georgia mayor was arrested after entering a house he claimed he thought was abandoned, only to come face to face in a bizarre standoff with a homeowner who held him at gunpoint until the police arrived. Claude Kamau was caught creeping around the lake property. Isn't that weird? The mayor is creeping around at 6 in the morning. Almost 7 in the morning. That'd be some shit.
Sounds like a mayor needs to lose his job.
That's weird. Saturday morning by the unnamed homeowner who ordered him to stay put, according to a police report. Do you know who the fuck I am? I'm the mayor and I'll wait for my police to get here and see what happens. That it almost feels like a parody skit. I'm gonna wait for my police to get here. You're the mayor. What are you doing creeping around the neighborhood at 7 in the morning? Kamau allegedly yelled back at the owner. Kamau has been mayor of the city of Fulton since January of 2022. Later told police he was on the private property because he was interested in purchasing the home, which he thought was abandoned. The mayor was arrested on criminal trespassing and burglary charges. He was released from the Fulton County Jail that evening after posting an $11,000 bond. That is fucking ridiculous. That doesn't make any damn sense. Okay, here's an interesting article. If it'll load, come on now. If it'll load, we would be going good. I mean, come on. Okay, here we are. Marketplace. This is an interesting article. It's from Marketplace Morning Report, which I've never done an article from before. So I don't know how legitimate it is. But basically, it says older gamers say that the industry doesn't design with them in mind, which some people think is absolute fucking bullshit, but let me read this article. So when you think about video games, someone over 50 might not be the first person who comes to mind. But when the AARP held its first summit for the game industry earlier this spring, the organization pointed out that a quarter of gamers in the country are 50 and over, and they account for $5 billion a year in game spending on everything from consoles to apps. That's just a fraction of overall U.S. spending on video games, which last year was $56 billion. But the number of older players keeps going up, and some see a missed business opportunity here, especially as 7 out of 10 older gamers don't think the industry designs games with them in mind, according to the AARP. Celia Pierce has been studying older gamers for years. She teaches game design at Northeastern University. She said, unlike the game industry, Hollywood has recognized the market power of older people. There are so many TV programs for and about older adults now, and it's baffling to me that the game industry is not taking the hint, she said. Pierce is part of a new research group at Northeastern called Games for Life, and wants to bridge the gap between what older players want and need, and the game industry, which is dominated by people under 35. Take game controllers, which require dexterity. They're hard for anyone with repetitive strain injury or arthritis, she said. And there's another thing. Tiny, tiny fonts. We can't read them. I always tell my students, please make a bigger font size. Nobody over 30 can read a 0.5 font size, she said. She added that older people don't just opt for brain teasers. They like a variety of games, including very story-heavy games like adventure games. Alex Pang can relate. He's been a gamer for a long time. The first one he tried was literally the first video game. Atari's Pong, he said. Today at 58, he's still a big fan of the Star Wars games, but he also enjoys quick games like Wordle on his phone. It takes maybe 2 minutes to play, is engaging, and then it's done, he said. I don't have to learn new controls. Well, isn't the answer right there? I mean, that's the answer. He says he doesn't have a lot of time, he's old, and Wordle is engaging, and then he has fun and he's finished. So, actually, a lot of older gamers seem to prefer playing games on their mobile phones. If that's the case, then why does the core gaming industry have to appeal to people that are better off in a casual gaming? I'm not saying everybody, but from what I'm seeing from this man. Anyway, it says, or take the time to familiarize himself with a whole new fantasy world. I guess that's difficult when you're over the age of 50. Kenny Rosenblatt is CEO of Arcadium, which makes word and puzzle games. The company now focuses solely on older gamers, what he calls grown-up gamers. We knew we needed to differentiate ourselves, and there was nobody in the entire gaming business who explicitly said they want the grown-up gamer to be their primary demographic, he said. Rosenblatt said that his gamers play to stay sharp and stay social. He said players have asked the company to design more multiplayer games that they can play on a phone, tablet, or computer. Well, I mean, it's actually what I just said. They want to play on their phones and tablets. So why do we need to redesign the whole industry for old farts? You know? It's just, I mean, that's just me. That's what I'm thinking. They were really looking for ways to connect to other people through games, he said. He added that most of them are in their 60s and 70s and some in their 80s. Believe it or not, I actually talked to a 70-year-old man who was reading Starless. Yes! Pang said he'll likely still be playing games at that age. So long as they're available and I can find ones I like, why not? He said games engage a part of his brain that nothing else does, and they're fun. I mean, I agree with that, but I think the answer's already there in mobile phones. So we have Psychology Today. Now, I don't know what this is going to be. This is just something I picked up. I don't know if you guys will get anything out of it or think it's garbage, but we're going through it. What is the triangle method flirting technique? The method is tearing through TikTok, but it may not be the shape of attraction. So basically, it looks like people have been pushing on social media for this triangle method of flirting. TikTok videos on the technique have accrued more than 24 million views, along with claims that it's a foolproof method for making someone fall for you. Really? And here I was thinking that good conversation and personality were the key. The triangle method is all about your eyes and the other person's eyes and mouth. You are first supposed to look at one of the eyes of that person. Then you quickly shift to looking at the person's mouth, followed by glancing at their other eye. The three body parts form the so-called golden triangle. You are now finished with the method. A key is not lingering too long on any of the three points. Linger too long on the person's mouth and that person may get a bit self-conscious about maybe having some pizza sauce or Nutella there. Also, don't show an expression of disgust while looking at any of the three points. Disgust is rarely an emotion that you want to elicit while flirting. Finally, don't count in a way that the object of your gaze can hear or see while you are triangling. What? Does the triangle method actually work? Well, I couldn't find any clinical trials on it. I'm not sure what the placebo control might be for such trials. Perhaps staring straight ahead, or maybe staring at random places on the person's face? There doesn't seem to be any peer-reviewed evidence of this effectiveness, but the triangle method is based on some reasonable rationale. It facilitates eye contact, which demonstrates interest and enhances connection. That seems natural and frankly obvious. The argument for looking at the mouth is that it may be a lead-in to a kiss. After all, your mouth is what you typically use to kiss, right? If that's not the case, then you're certainly doing it wrong. Will the triangle method be the magical missing piece of your dating puzzle? Will you someday say, "No one was interested in me until I begun the triangle method"? I think you're an idiot. And now dates are beating down on my door. Buy my book! That's what comes next, right? Will the triangle method work for me? Buy my book and it'll work for you. I don't know. The triangle method may
work. It always goes back to that, huh?
Yeah. Grifting. I don't know. The triangle method may work well for those who can naturally incorporate such deliberate moves into their repertoire, or who can't remember to maintain a reasonable amount of eye contact. But for others, remembering and trying to execute this specific routine can make things feel kind of mechanical. It could get weird to have to say to a date, "Hey, can you please look up from the menu for a second? Yes, and could you lower the menu a bit so I can see your mouth too? Oh wait, your hand is blocking one of your eyes. Could you move that as well? Wait, your mouth is now blocked again." That sounds fucking ridiculous. Flirting techniques don't really work if the other person's already biased against you, in some way, or the two of you are clearly not a match. The triangle method seems more gimmick than game changer. It seems like a recast of a basic principle. Try to maintain eye contact in a natural, non-creepy manner. And eye contact doesn't mean staring at just one of the person's eyes. Staring at any single body part for too long is not a good idea. They'll think you're crazy. In the end, it's best to be yourself. Act naturally rather than repeating some kind of planned technique. View flirting and dating as ways to get to know each other and see whether or not you are indeed a fit for each other. That's a fit in a personality sense, not a geometric type of way. That's weird. Okay. So we have The Empire Strips Back, leaves Chicago, but tickets are still available. After rave reviews and sold-out shows across the world, the central sci-fi production set in the Star Wars universe has had another phenomenal run. Don't miss the sexiest show in the galaxy. A show like none other has been wowing audiences at the Chicago Logan Square Auditorium. The Empire Strips Back combines incredible burlesque performances with the world of Star Wars. The show is entering its final weeks in Chicago, but you can still get tickets before it's gone. It originated in Sydney, Australia in 2011. Since then, it's traveled across the globe and is coming off a fantastic West Coast run. The spaced-out striptease has visited San Francisco and Los Angeles, consistently selling out shows along the way. At every stop of its tour, The Empire Strips Back has been getting rave reviews. Broadway World praised the show for skillfully melding elements of traditional striptease with a knowledge and deep affection of the Star Wars franchise. What? Ariana Bynum of Sci-Fi Gate described the San Francisco show as one of the most memorable and impressive live performances she'd ever seen. Gabriel Iglesias, comedian, even enjoyed himself at one of the performances. Huh. They said the dancers are the stars of the production, but the wardrobe, sets, and props in The Empire Strikes Back are also top tier. Whether it's Luke Skywalker's speeder in a sexy car wash, Leia's metal bikini, or Jabba the Hutt himself, everything on stage looks straight out of the latest Star Wars blockbuster. So did they use like a really fat woman for Jabba, or what? I mean, that's what I'm thinking, right? They've got a... It says it's a burlesque parody. So maybe they did use a big fat woman. Okay, so Florida doing something based. Even though I've seen that problems with more women from Florida. You know, the world is telling me increasingly to stay away from Florida women. Just something about them. Crazy. Anyway, Governor Ron DeSantis signs new... Damn it. There we are. Governor Ron DeSantis signs new law ending permanent alimony in Florida. Supporters and opponents do not agree on whether the new law applies to existing alimony agreements. So, Ron DeSantis has signed several new laws into effect, including a law that overhauls the state alimony laws by eliminating permanent alimony payments. That's fucking great news, right? That's what a lot of you guys wanted. I guess a bunch of guys are gonna go off the MGTOW train. Oh, time to find me a wife now! While supporters say this law won't apply to existing alimony agreements, opponents say that could happen. DeSantis signed this bill Friday night. The new law went into effect Saturday. God damn, that's fast. Supporters say this bill limits how long an ex-spouse would be required to make alimony payments. They also say it'll cut down on litigation by creating more certainty in the calculations for alimony. Wow. Republican State Representative John Snyder of Martin County, who approved the bill, shared the following statement with WPBF 25 News. As society changes, we have more households where both spouses work. By eliminating permanent alimony, the bill strikes a good balance between supporting the spouse who might not earn as much income during the marriage while also encouraging self-supporting. The bill will also cut back on litigation by creating more certainty in the calculations of alimony. Opponents like Democratic State Representative Anna Eskamani of Orlando say the law is harmful to many Floridians, especially women. Well, they can throw her in the fucking ocean. Florida has already taken away women's rights when it comes to women's issues, and we seem to be moving backwards in so many different policy arenas, and I was very concerned that this was just another example of that, said Eskamani. We're taking this process out of a judge's hands and into the legislature where it can be very political and very biased. Cry me a fucking river.
The only time they don't want equality is when it comes to them getting...
She also says it's possible the new law will allow judges to end some existing alimony agreements, and the new law won't only apply to future agreements. Which is great! There are people that are in alimony fucking wage cage hell because they're constantly paying fucking alimony for the rest of their life.
But now they aren't doing the same job anymore. They're not.
Democratic State Senator Lori Berryman of Palm Beach County agrees with Eskamani. I put an amendment on to say that this bill is not retroactive and they would not accept my amendment. So I worry that even though they have made representations that it's not retroactive, that there are parts of it that will in fact have the same effect as it was retroactive, she said. The founder of the First Wives Advocacy Group, Jan Kalia of Boca Raton, says the organization was disappointed by DeSantis' decision to sign the bill. I mean, the First Wives Advocacy Group. Of course they're going to be pissed. We believe by signing it, he has put older women in a situation which will cause financial devastation, says Kalilia. The so-called party of family values has just contributed to erosion of the institution of marriage in Florida.
I think it's contributed to the fickleness that women treat.
Right.
When you think about 20 years ago, a woman would look at marriage like, this is what I've wanted all my life. And this,
right.
Now
she's
they're
like,
oh, well, if I don't like them, that no biggie. Even
right.
Though it's till death do you part, I'll just divorce them and collect a check.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an old saying.
What incentive is it ever for a guy to get married nowadays with
right.
that going on?
It's like an old saying. How you like them apples? I mean, pretty much. How you like them apples? Don't like it when the shoe's on the other foot now, do you?
Bitch is a crap.
That's what it is. Oh no, she's mad. No, that. Well, now you don't get to fuck over people.
Hook up with her anyway, probably.
Yeah. Now you don't look again.
Just like though George Carlin, why is it the women that always are afraid of getting raped are the ones you wouldn't want to fuck in the first place?
Right. Right. And this kind of bullshit. New York Post. I sneak into all-inclusive resorts with my old wristbands to party with my kids for free. That's like super fucking illegal.
Now, there's a mom back when I was in high school. I don't name any names.
Right.
But she would come to parties with her daughter, who's my age.
Right.
And try to hook up with all the guys, and I mean she's pretty,
right?
I guarantee you wouldn't kick her out of bed eating up. But you know, I think about how much probably trauma and disgust and everything else it probably caused my friend, and you know, that's terrible. Like,
well,
rented someone's life. Of course, you know, I see nothing wrong with dating an older woman.
We've got some more articles that just popped up that I've got to cover. I definitely got to cover these. Just give me a second. You thought the fucking NBC trend was crazy. Wait till you hear this. But let me go through this article first, and then we're going to jump right on that. Because you will not fucking believe what I can't believe what I read. No. There's people that need to be just completely, just lobotomize them. Seriously, lobotomize them. Okay, I sneak into all-inclusive... Okay, we talked about that. Talk about a free-for-all that's unfit for the entire family. A sneaky mom is proudly boasting her latest parenting hack, using inspired wristbands from an all-inclusive resort to enjoy food and drinks and take advantage of the luxe facilities with her kids. Gratis. When Roxanne Balciones revealed that her brood visited the Ramada Hotel and Suites in Kosadasi, Aden, Turkey... from her homeland of Sheffield, South Yorkshire in May, she tossed her used wristbands into her travel bag. Upon rediscovering them at a later date, she decided to book another stay in the same town on July 7th, but this time in a cheap apartment 10 minutes away from the resort. With the old bracelets in tow, she tried to sneak into the resort where her mom was staying, while she and her two children, ages 13 and 6, were wearing the wristbands. To her amazement, it worked! Now, viral TikTok footage from her lavish stay shows the family of three who vacation together on a monthly basis, according to this mom of the year, gorging on desserts and lavish meals poolside and free of charge. Online, she bragged about stealing the Ramada all-inclusive. Call me a thief all you like, but I enjoyed my week of free food and drink.
I have a case.
Boasted Balcionis, who is employed as a hospitality worker. Oh, she is. Feel sad for those people who work really hard for things, and people like you think they can just cheat the system. Yeah. And it basically says she told Kennedy News that she had encouraged her mom to stay at the resort for the last minute trip, and upon finding her old bands from May, began joking about the prospects of hotel crashing. I was just messing about, saying we'll go and eat their food, she said. I was just joking at first to the kids, but then we did. She added, this sounds like something out of a fucking sitcom.
I was just joking like about an episode, robbing that bank until I did.
Like an episode of Married with Children. Yeah, this sounds like something that Peggy would do.
Oh.
That totally sounds like Al something Bundy's Peggy would do.
You know,
yeah, he would be.
He's like, that's why I married you.
Yeah. She added, I booked last minute to go and surprise her. I used the bands and it worked. The enterprising mom of two claimed the hotel workers didn't check her wristbands when she entered the facilities. A security slip Balcionis and her son found quite funny. I was really conscious that they'd notice, but luckily they didn't, she said. As the lucky family embarked on the ultimate food heist, Balcionis admitted she ate more than she usually would because it was free! Imagine that! Imagine you don't have to pay for something, so you're just going to fucking splurge.
As you want.
Wow. It made it more exciting because it was free, she said. I think I ate more this time than I did last time when we paid. However, she... Balcionas, who complimented the lovely hotel, admitted she won't be trying this again, especially after sharing the incriminating footage to TikTok where she's racked up quite the cheering section. Absolutely hilarious. Well done, wrote one fan in the comments. Other online viewers applied the sly mother's so-called bravery, while others scolded her for taking advantage of the resort and brazenly boasting about her fete on TikTok. Bloody hell, you're braver than me, championed another. But one critic couldn't believe she outed herself, writing, "Why would you air yourself? Some things are better left unsaid."
Dumb bitch.
So, if you can afford to go on holiday every month, why would you steal from the hotel like that, scrutinized another. And then, like I said before, feel sad for those people who work really hard for things and people like you just think they can cheat the system, yeah, chided someone else. The Post has reached out to the Ramada's parent company, Wyndham Hotels and Resorts, for comment. Now, that's pretty fucked up. But you know what's really, really fucked up? This just happened. July 20th. Mark this on your calendar, Tack. Don't eat borax. Experts blast toxic TikTok trend as potentially dangerous. Maybe you remember the life-threatening Tide Pod challenge of 2018.
Another one?
In which people were dared to eat the laundry detergent, leading to several deaths.
Well, you know what?
Now, now there's an insane new online trend that all the kids are loving. And you know what? The Grimlord has... I got something to say. Please, if you are enjoying the borax, by all means, eat all the borax you want. Just eat it as much as you possibly can. Because guess what? If you eat enough of it, then I won't have to worry about the further...
This is day one of me ingesting borax. I hopped on the borax train. Oh. I jumped on the borax train. I have officially jumped on the borax train.
These are all
train.
Beautiful
borax.
Women!
Borax.
What? Hold on!
What is it supposed to do? Make you infertile or something?
They're idiots! I was looking at the footage there.
It's roach poison.
There's some beautiful women eating... You know what? Here's the thing. There's men, there's women, there's older people. I'll tell you what. Eat all the borax you want. Take it, put it in a glass, drink it down, because if you take care of yourself, then I won't have to worry about any further stupid decisions you make. Because maybe eating borax is a bad decision on your part, but if you survive, then that means you'll live to make even worse decisions that could possibly affect me. And I don't want that to happen, because I don't make stupid decisions like deciding to fucking eat borax. Anyway, they said, might be even more dangerous consuming borax, a laundry powder, and pesticide.
Exactly.
A handful of TikTok videos show people jumping on the borax train by adding the white powder to smoothies or coffee as a way to ease the symptoms of arthritis, lupus, or other health issues.
Oh yeah,
you're going to ease those arthritis and lupus symptoms.
You know,
if you take enough of it, you'll never have arthritis or lupus ever again. Just pour as much borax as you want into your coffee.
Come up with a dumber way to kill off people.
Just continue doing it. Please, please, please. But borax is actually a poisonous compound and should never be eaten. Dr. Kelly Johnson Arbor, I feel so sorry for this woman. A medical toxicology doctor and co-director at National Capital Poison Center told Yahoo in the Know, borax consumption has been recently popularized on TikTok as a way to treat inflammation, but there's no evidence that swallowing borax has any human health benefits. Borax is a naturally
unkillable. Why would you even think? Oh, maybe I should eat this.
Borax is a naturally occurring compound, often known as sodium borate, that contains the elements boron, sodium, oxygen, and hydrogen. Borax can be mined from dried lake beds like those around California's Death Valley. I wonder why they call it
Death
that.
Death Valley, huh?
I wonder. Let's get all the borax from Death Valley. It's surely like, that's that?
It's like our hot springs here in Arkansas.
Just, right.
Oh, get all the free spring water you want. And you're like, oh, Borax for days. Come to our Death Valley water supply.
For years, people have used Borax as a laundry additive, a pesticide, a household cleanser, and a herbicide to unclog drains. So, you know, think about that. You are taking pesticide and drain cleaner and eating it. That's, you know, almost as bad as bleach.
A lot of heavy-duty drain cleaners are covered in plastic so you don't touch it. People are drinking it.
It can also be found in some paints, acne products, and specialty oral care
acne,
products.
Like Looney Tunes.
Yeah. Acne. It can be safe when used topically and not swallowed. It's unclear how the Borax train became an online trend, but I'll bet Klaus Schwab had something to do with it. That would be my money. Oh, yes, yes, Borax for inflammation. Yes, just definitely use Borax. And bugs, eat bugs and use Borax. As a matter of fact, have bug sandwich with Borax.
That's
Borax
how
in little
lupus
water?
During the Holocaust.
It's good.
Yes.
It's unclear how the Borax trade came off, but some sources cite the work of researcher Rex Newnham, who published work in the 90s advocating that boron, not Borax, was an essential mineral lacking for many diets. It's known to be dangerous when ingested. It can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, skin flushing, rash, excitation, convulsions, depression, and vascular collapse.
But you won't have inflammation, huh?
Boron toxicity can also cause headache, hypothermia. Man, that sounds real fun, doesn't it?
It was 98 degrees, but now I have hypothermia.
Restlessness, weariness, renal injury, dermatitis, alopecia, anorexia, and indigestion.
I guarantee you that should be something for the guys. No one wants renal injury.
And infants, boron intakes have caused anemia, seizures, erythema, and thin hair, the NIH added. Extremely high doses of boron can be fatal. For example, 15,000 to 20,000 milligrams can cause death in adults. So I highly recommend that if, you know, you're having your morning coffee and you're really interested in this awesome new Borax trend, just make sure that you have at least put 15,000 to 20,000 milligrams in each cup of coffee.
Oh,
just that much.
Some of these women,
you know,
they're
just
dumb enough to drink
just
Borax.
That much.
They're dumb enough to make a bad decision.
Even U.S. Borax, the maker of 20 Mule Team Borax, states on its FDA status page, U.S. Borax does not offer any product that we approve nor intend for use as dietary ingredient, pharmaceutical and or over-the-counter active ingredient, nor food additive or direct additive to foods.
But it's our a healthy products, smoothie.
Our products are labeled as not for internal use, and thus are not intended for internal related applications, nor as an active ingredient. And, okay, so, do people on social media realize how dumb this is? Yes! Many TikTok users have expressed outrage that this potentially deadly trend even exists. How have we circled back around to the ingesting laundry stuff era? It's insane this has to be said. And purely from seeing what it does when I use it on laundry, what an insane leap to willingly ingest it. And a chemist working on his PhD in organic chemistry is begging people to please stop eating Borax.
If there's no
don't eat
to be
shit out
him.
Of the fucking laundry box, people, he implored. This is patently dangerous. You know, I love it when a chemist that's working on his PhD actually says, don't eat shit out of the fucking laundry box, people. Like, this man is supposed to be a professional, and he's got to use
to the universe.
He's got to use expletives because he can't believe how stupid. What are you people fucking doing? I'm a chemist here, and I'm
the Joker couldn't have planned a better chemical to put in a parade of balloons. The
Borax is actually really not good for you. According to the literature, it can cause kidney failure. And it can cause reproductive harm. It also can cause developmental issues. So,
renal and reproductive harm, guys. No one wants that. Of course, if you're drinking Borax.
Just another awesome.
Anyway.
I like this guy. He says, just another awesome trend to thin out the herd.
Exactly.
There you go. Let's see. I'm trying to... Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you're dumb enough to drink Borax or do these stupid challenges or watch TikTok, you deserve to croak.
You're doing something that they had to keep an eye on kids not to accidentally...
Now, listen to this. In China, the TikTok algorithm does not allow this nonsense, so the Chinese are laughing at the rest of the world as they continue to allow this stupidity to undermine Western societies. Exactly. And the man says to him, all by design, my friend. All by design.
Exactly.
It's definitely by design.
If you think the Chinese have your best interests, think again. Or... I say the Chinese government.
Sometimes
it's may not.
Sometimes it's best to leave morons alone to do their thing.
Well, yeah, true. But some of them are stupid people, like when Jackass was so big.
Yeah, I like this guy. But if we're not supposed to eat Borax, how come it's so delicious? Yum, yum. Eat it all up. Eat the whole box. I agree. Please, eat the whole box. If you are one of these people that says, I'm not going to listen to science, I'm gonna use Borax, I'm going to continue to ingest it, then please,
when I'm using...
put as much as you can. Just, you know that little, you know, that tablespoon you put in there? Switch that up and put a whole cup of Borax in there. You'll barely even taste it in your coffee. And you'll feel so much better, I swear to God. You'll be so much better after you've ingested that Borax.
That's how women kill men on Dateline NBC.
Yep.
Oh... I put it on, I mix it with water and pour it on wood with termites to get rid of the termites so I can use the wood for woodworking.
If you have to tell someone not to eat Borax, what's the point in telling them anything?
Well, I'll tell you, that could be a philosophy for anything. If someone's already doing stupid stuff and acts like they know better than me.
I just can't believe I had to go through this article.
Who's dumber, the one that's doing it anyway or the guy trying to convince someone not to do it?
I honestly can't believe I had to read this article. This is truly the dumbest fucking thing I have ever seen in my entire... I mean...
Didn't necessarily have to read it, it's just...
No, I mean, I can't believe I had to read this article. I can't believe... No, it's not even that. I can't believe that this article exists. I can't believe that the human race is stupid enough to...
I think
to,
it's almost self... you know, it's trying to self... wipe itself off the face of the earth. When you're lacking in basic intelligence and, oh, I want to be TikTok famous. Well, go ahead.
It's so stupid.
Oh, yeah. TikTok famous don't mean crap. Maybe there's a way to make money off of it, but if you're eating Borax, you'll be able to afford all your medical bills, maybe.
Oh my God, these people. It's so stupid. It's so incredibly stupid. Okay, so we've
Everyone
got an...
should eat ass. They should put it in their breakfast cereal. Oh, yes,
God,
everybody.
If they did, by the way...
Probably healthier than Borax.
By the way, I told Drex the new trend that women are... Yeah, these German shepherds are eating ass now.
Hey.
And you know what he said? He said, bah! He's laughing. He thinks it's hilarious. Y'all better be careful with these girls, you know, kissing all on them and everything. They're eating ass. If you go to kiss, she might not even brush her teeth after that. She may spray that breast spray in there.
I guarantee you. Your breath smell like shit, girl. Get out of my face.
Survey, half of Tinder users don't want a date. Yeah, because a lot of these women is eating ass.
And not just that, taking your money after. I guarantee you. No, they're doing...
All right.
They're doing the ass eating for free. They're just screwing you.
So listen to this. In a survey of more than 1,000 Tinder users... of more than 1,000 Tinder users... half said they were not interested in meeting offline, and nearly two-thirds were already married or in a relationship.
Yeah.
With an estimated 75 million active users each month, Tinder is the most popular dating app in the world. But the new study finds that many users are not swiping for dates. In fact, the psychological motivations behind people's use of the app varied widely and had a strong influence on their satisfaction with the app and the dates it led to, according to the study in the journal Cyber Psychology, Behavior and Social Network.
You're a psycho, though. I mean...
For many people, online dating has a similar appeal as social media, a source of entertainment, distraction, and self-esteem, and may have similar pitfalls, says Elias, I'm not even pronouncing his last name, clinical professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine and author of the study. Despite the popularity of online dating, research on people's experience with dating apps is lacking. I was quite struck by how little data there was when it comes to how satisfied people were with online dating in general and with the offline dates that it can result in, he says. To explore the dating app experience, he and colleagues from France and Switzerland surveyed 1,387 English-speaking Tinder users, ages 17 to 84. Wow, asking about their motivations for using the app. The number of matches and offline dates they had, their relationship status, their selectiveness in choosing partners, and among other factors, psychological measures like impulsivity, depression, loneliness, and self-esteem. All data was self-reported through an online questionnaire. They can lie, though. The users also rated their overall satisfaction with the app as well as their satisfaction with offline dates. The surprising part is that a big percentage, about half, were not going online to find dates. Well, you think? It becomes an interesting question as to why someone would spend all the time on a dating app if they're not interested in finding a date. Besides looking for committed romantic partners or uncommitted sex partners, many people reported using the app for social connectedness, for entertainment and distraction, to increase positive emotions, and to cope with negative ones. We call them dating apps, but they're clearly serving other functions besides dating, he says. Yeah. On average, study participants rated their overall satisfaction with Tinder a 2.39 on a 4-point scale. Offline dates came in an average of 3.05 on a 5-point scale. The researchers developed a machine learning model to determine how strongly each variable predicted satisfaction with the app. Variables with the strongest positive influence, one that led to more satisfaction with the app, included using the app for its intended purpose of finding romantic partners or people to socialize with, and a greater number of matches. In contrast, those with the strongest negative influence, leading to a less satisfaction, including using Tinder to cope with negative emotions, an avoidant attachment style, being more guarded in relationships, and psychological qualities like impulsivity, especially lack of premeditation and perseverance, and depressive mood. The results suggest that online dating is an ineffective coping mechanism for those facing mental health challenges, he says. As someone who has studied problematic internet use for 15 years, he drew parallels to social media use, which can exacerbate conditions like depression, anxiety, and low self-esteem.
Well, yeah. You're secluding yourself, but seeing everyone else being social.
Right. He says you need to work on unhealthy coping. You need to work on the unhealthy coping mechanism, but you also need to address what it is that you're trying to cope with, he advises. If it turns out that there's an actual mental health condition, be it depression, ADHD, anxiety, or something else, we don't want that to go undiagnosed. There are established treatments that can be very effective for those conditions. The variable that most strongly predicted higher satisfaction with Tinder-generated offline dates was age. Perhaps older people who did not grow up with dating apps approach them with a healthy level of circumspection and tend to be more selective in their matches, he says. I think the average user could probably learn from this finding and be happier with their online dating experience, he says.
Yeah. I mean, depends on how they're wording it. They saying be happy with something even though it may not be your type or someone. Or just don't overshoot it and try to date. Because I guarantee you, gorgeous women aren't on there because they're looking for dates.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some. Don't get me wrong. Usually there's now, job or something conflicting with them going on dates.
Drex,
but they don't have to. They could throw a rock and hit like five guys that'd love to take them out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's all kinds of women that are just... Excuse me. There's all kinds of guys out there that are willing to take on just even women that you would think aren't that damn attractive. They're like, well, I see something in her. Well, I want Brad Pitt. I'm sorry, you're not getting Brad Pitt or Jason Momoa or Chris Evans or Chris Hemsworth or any of these guys that you
know, those
consider...
are manufactured humans.
Right.
But basically, their look was designed by a team.
Yes.
It wasn't... I mean, you could get any guy and pretty much do
turn
that.
Him into that. Absolutely.
Put him in a gym. Yeah. They have trainers that, you know, have, you know, pretty much baby him, wake him up at a certain time to work out, have them work out, have their whole routine of what they work out, which, I mean, not a bad deal if you can afford it, but everything about them has been manufactured.
Right. Like,
if you had a kid and did the same thing, they would grow up to be, I guess, Jason Momoa or whoever
else. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you should grow your hair long.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, get some random tattoos that you don't really care about.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. You know, but, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of factors in regular human lives that doesn't go into celebrity life. Now, there's stresses with celebrities. I wouldn't doubt it. I'm sure they have stalkers and different hazards, but like work stress, and I'm sure a lot of people can concur with this, that affects how you stay in shape and everything else too. Like,
yep.
The more cortisol you produce, the more likely it's going to be hard for people to stay fit and not put on weight, because stress is your body's way of telling you you're getting ready for hard times. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I mean, they have time to do stuff because they are paid to do stuff. And
right.
But, you know, post on their Instagram, go to dinners and, you know, parties in Hollywood, mm-hmm. congratulating each other, you know, several things. So, you know, if you want that kind of guy, go for it. But I tell you, there aren't but a few. And you've probably seen them in the movies. Or they're manufactured somewhere else, like sports or... Anyway, at that point, it's almost just money, because there's some goofy-looking people in sports.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you.
There really are.
Well, they don't have their team focused on looks. They're like, well, as long as you can make a touchdown or dribble a basketball or, you know, hit a ball 400 yards into the stadium.
Yeah, that's it, though.
It's all about knocking balls around.
Pretty much.
And so... Yeah, as long as they're making the money.
Yep, that's it.
They don't have to worry about being...
Okay. So, let's go on to the last article. Since we are doing more comics, I'm going to be doing some more criticism of these comics articles. This is from CBR.com. 15 Marvel comic covers that aged poorly. Now, I can't actually give you the... You know, you can't show you the covers. I'll show them the DP. But these... covers, like, there are people I want them to eat more borax, basically. I want you to hop on the borax trend. I'll just say that. Okay, so Marvel Comics has
viewership?
No, I'm talking about in this
other people not listening.
No, I'm talking about the people that write these articles. The people that write for the people that write for comic book CBR.com. I want them to eat more borax. I want you to try the borax trend. We appreciate all our viewers here.
Yes.
And we know that our viewers probably won't agree because they're so... Hold on. Let me talk.
Oh, yeah. Talk,
let me talk. Okay. We know that our viewers will definitely disagree, or maybe with most, of the things that CBR says aged poorly in comics. What they're going to talk about here is 15 comic covers, cover art, that they said have aged poorly.
I was thinking about the Superman episode where Lois Lane
No. These are covers.
Yeah.
So, let's begin. This was May 19th, and it was updated by Thayer Priest Parker, who is a writer, artist, and musician based in Canberra, Australia. Okay, so basically this person is very woke, but anyway, it says, Marvel Comics and their predecessor, Timely, have been in business since 1939. It's no wonder that not every cover has aged well. Marvel Comics has published tens of thousands of issues since it started as Timely in 1939. Some of those comics feature iconic cover art, while others are completely forgettable. However, fans remember some covers for the wrong reasons. With art dating back to the 1930s, it's no surprise that some covers may have aged poorly. More surprising is how many covers from recent decades have joined the regrettable ranks. Okay, now again, this is not me. This is something I disagree with highly. Marvelous.
You know what I think? I think CBR's aged poorly.
They have.
Yeah.
Marvel has tried to be progressive. The company made headlines with its decisions to address issues like alcoholism and domestic violence well before comics regularly dealt with topical issues. Marvel's titles feature characters of different genders, ethnicities, and abilities, including some of the comics' first LGBTQ heroes. Despite its track record, however, Marvel hasn't always gotten it right. Updated on May 18th by Casey Coates. Okay, warning. This article discusses racism and inappropriate sexualization in comics.
All right.
That just made me want to, you know.
Makes me want to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me go look at this in Chrome so we can actually see the covers. Because I have to refresh this article so I can see the covers.
While we're doing that, man, I'm kind of sad about Australia. That, you know, years ago, that used, when you thought Australia, you like, that's the land of manly men and
yeah,
tough
used to be
women, gorgeous women. Now it's just a woke mess.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, they done turned them into
and everything else still things. Wants to kill you.
So here we go.
Oh, yeah, the animals there aren't woke.
The first one,
they'll kill you.
Captain America Comics number 13, 1941. Captain America debuted with a bang in 41. His first Simon and Kirby cover featured Cap punching Hitler in the face.
Yeah.
The cover was very on brand for the character, giving his role as a pinnacle of American patriotism. Interestingly, Cap was what American conservatives later called a premature anti-fascist, entering World War II months before his country did. After Japan attacked Pearl Harbor in 41, it's no surprise Cap turned his attention to America's newest foe in 13. Unfortunately, Al Avison, who drew the cover for the issue, treated the Japanese people on this cover very differently than the Germans, relying on racist caricatures and giving them inhuman features like long fangs in an effort to dehumanize America's opponents in the war. Yeah! Like,
Let me check it out. I've seen it before, I think, but... Oh, yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah!
That aged about the right amount.
Yeah, I don't see any.
People knew that was the setting. You know, other countries probably did the same thing to Americans, you know, even though America's a bowling pot, so you don't...
We've always been that way.
...picture a certain race, but, yeah.
Yeah, we've always kind of been that way. Unfortunately, some of these comics aren't showing up. I wonder if there is an archive that has all this stuff here.
And when you think about it, too, comics back in the day used to be like wrestling in the 80s. Adults were just as big a comic book readers as kids were.
Yeah.
Like, it was huge. And so, I want to say, you know, they had German parties in America, too, during, World War II and all that. And Germans who had migrated. If you ever watched that Army Hammer documentary, I think his family was involved in some of that, too. The both writers of Superman were Jewish.
Right.
And they were getting death threats and not being allowed to leave the building that they worked in and all kinds of stuff. And so they were posting all kinds of things about the war.
Well, keep talking because I'm backing up the article. Right. Oddly enough, this isn't on archive. Yeah, I'm serious. You'd think that they would back up this shit so people would have it so they would know.
They probably want you to... get their stuff.
No. Archive usually people post this stuff to preserve it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if they try to say, we had this woke take and we got rid of it. Well, you say, oh, yeah, well, we have that stored. So, you know, you tried, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, we have all the really evidence. We know. And but also, it comes without the ads.
How is that... Well, honestly, it's probably a taste of their own medicine, but how is that different from the leftist? Because they'll take something you did like 10 years ago when it wasn't anything...
Well, no, I'm saying the difference between them. I'm saying if they... delete their thing so that it didn't exist. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got rid of it. It just goes to show
that they're more about deception than they are truth.
Okay, so we have it now. It only took, how long do you think that was? About maybe three, maybe a minute?
Yeah,
okay, so now we're good. All right, so now we have the next one. Incredible Hulk, this is number 14. This is Incredible Hulk 355, 89. The first volume of The Incredible Hulk pitted him against all kinds of villains who would become central to Hulk's rogues gallery. Issue 355 sees Glorian rope Hulk into a fantasy where he gets everything he wants. Food, beautiful women, and the admiration of his fellow Avengers. The cover shows how Glorian enchanted the Jade Giant with a rainbow ray, telling him, "Don't struggle, Hulk, I just want to give you your wildest dreams." Looking back to The Incredible Hulk 355, it's very easy to spot the non-consensual tones of this dialogue. Oh no! The Hulk didn't consent to being tied up by a rainbow! Like, look at that!
You know who to blame for the rainbow.
No. Okay. It was obviously, you know, Valhalla and the rainbow.
A lot of that's in Ragnarok.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, probably what they referenced.
The Hulk, I mean, can you believe this, Tack? The Hulk did not give consent to be tied up. Oh no! Hulk smash and destroy everything. Does that mean when Hulk goes on a fucking... it's bad because the people didn't consent to having their shit destroyed? I didn't consent to having my car thrown through a window.
It's all Bruce Banner's fault.
Oh man. Okay, She-Hulk number 40, 92.
But that is just...
Yeah, it did.
That's why she was popular.
Matter of fact, we're going to put this little bad one. We're going to put this one right here in the voice text that I'm in.
Who's in the crazy?
There we go. Look at that one. Oh, shit. So, unfortunately, they're not... you have to download it, but it's just the image. Anyway, it says, having recently joined the MCU via her Disney Plus show with the same name, She-Hulk is arguably one of Earth's strongest characters in Marvel. However, fans can't see any of that strength on the cover for Sensational She-Hulk 40, which was drawn by the series writer-artist John Byrne. Here, she cowers and tries to stretch out her title Comics Code Authority seal of approval to cover her naked body. She is clearly uncomfortable with her nudity. And the caption, "Because you demanded it," further implies a lack of consent on her part. Byrne's hand comes in from offstage, handing her props and telling her to stop stalling, which only makes this cover that much more creepier. It's so bad!
Gonna have to send me that
one. Yeah, see, that's a nice, that's a good cover, right?
Yeah, that's going on
that's
my wall.
John Byrne right there.
I'm gonna print that up.
That's a fucking classic.
Oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah!
I mean...
That's John Byrne. That is a legendary cover, by the way.
Parts of that show were okay, and then other parts of it make you cringe. Like,
by the way, I've got a friend of mine that knows an awful lot about these comics, and he said that the, All right. He said, John Byrne's She-Hulk is the best She-Hulk. That cover is great. Yeah. CBR's authors are just an army of militant homosexuals who have issues with pretty the female much, form.
Pretty much.
That cover is amazing.
No, that's great. I want that one.
Amazing Spider-Man 422. This is funny. This is actually 97. Exposed Wiring focuses on Max Dillon, also known as Electro, who's about to die in an electric chair. The story available in Amazing Spider-Man 422 follows his last moments and the way his life flashes before his eyes. The cover depicts the actual execution with Max crying in fear and pain as electricity goes through his body. Although the cover isn't as explicit as it could be, it's still quite graphic, especially since society now considers the electric chair an obsolete and inhuman method of execution. The comic's depiction of capital punishment is far less acceptable as human rights become a more current topic.
Do you think they were thinking about human rights when they were
killing
everyone?
It's a fucking comic book!
It is a comic book, but if you think about... That's awesome.
That's awesome!
I like that. That's great artwork. But, yeah, really, but that goes into how they feel about real serial killers and stuff. Like, they had no consideration about... What was proper and humane.
Look at this next one. Number 11. Elf number 48. 1991.
Uh-oh.
Wow. I can't believe this exists. Oh my god.
Well, eat me a cat.
Like, I can actually kind of agree with them on this one. This is unreal. I'm going to download this image and throw it in the thing later. But this. Okay. Most Marvel fans have probably forgotten that the company once published a comic series based on the 80s TV show ALF, yeah. Which I probably need to go get again. But it definitely happened. The company might be hoping fans' collective forgetfulness will remain intact if this cover is any indication of its content. The cover for ALF number 48, drawn by Dave Manek and Michael Gallagher, makes a play on words involving the safety seal on new products by showing ALF holding a seal the animal. The seal is in obvious distress, and it's easy to wonder if something unsavory is happening here.
He eats cats.
Look at the damn seal.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Right? Holy shit.
Boy, he is plowing that seal.
He is plowing that fucking seal. I cannot believe this comic cover exists.
So that's why he and Heidi Klum broke up.
Is that who does the voice of... Elf?
No!
Seal!
The singer!
Oh!
Goofball.
Patsy Walker, 105. I don't know much about this, but my friend does. He actually chimed in, and I'll bring his point up. But this is 1963. This is prior to Marvel. It was a different era when her first fur coat could be a premise for an entire comic book, as it was in Patsy Walker, 105. Patsy's affection for animal-based outerwear has not aged well over time. His attitudes towards fur have changed drastically over the years. Although artist Al Hartley had no way to know that fur would fall out of fashion, his condescending attitude toward teenage girls has arguably aged even worse than fur, proclaiming that the most exciting day in the life of any teenager is the day they'll get their first fur. Patsy herself says she'd rather die than remove her new coat.
So if there's grass on the field... Or if there's fur on the field, play ball.
Now, as far as this, and the Patsy Walker 105, these people don't know jack shit about the history of comics, and they don't know female comic readers. Girls bought those comics in spades. In the 50s and into the early 60s, before the code well and truly killed off many genres for a number of years, romance, horror, and westerns were the big sellers.
Yeah, that's where Tales from the Crypt came from.
Yep.
Several things.
Women were reading comics back then.
Yeah.
Now we have number 9, Ecstatics, number 15, 2003, by Peter Milligan, by the way. Great writer. X-Force 116, number 116, marks Ecstatics' debut. A new mutant super team created replaced X-Force after the latter to sacrifice themselves in the battle against Romany Wisdom. The team was never as successful as the X-Men, X-Force, or any other iconic Marvel team, but fans still remember the team for the cover of Ecstatics 15, which features Princess Diana reborn as a superhero. Since Marvel released the cover 6 years after Princess Diana's death, it was quite controversial at the time. In fact, the new superhero, Henrietta Hunter, replaced the character. However, Princess Diana's inclusion was part of the series' social satire. Many modern readers find it despicable that Marvel used a recently deceased public figure like that.
Yeah, they probably had it pre-planned. Now, I mean, it could be a tribute.
Yeah, it's a tribute, and it's nothing amazing either.
That just goes to show they will come up with anything. But what? Think about how often woke people do stuff like that,
right,
and call it great, especially when they ruin people's childhoods.
Heroes for Hire, number 13. I like this cover. It's 2006, and this is part of World War Hulk. Heroes in a State of Peril are common on the covers of comic books. The cover for Heroes for Hire 13 takes the concept to a new level. The Black Cat, Colleen Wing, and an unrecognizable Misty Knight are bound on this cover, barely covered by their costumes, while glistening, dripping tentacles hover near their chests. I'm not gonna lie, folks, this looks like a hentai cover, and even the art kind of looks a little bit anime. Marvel published the cover, created by artist Sana Takeda of Monstrous fame. So that's why it looks Japanese.
Let me check this out.
Just give me a minute. It's covert sexualization of three heroines in reference to hentai comics have aged poorly. I don't want to get in a fight with... I don't want to get in a fight with, what's his name? The dude that's doing this article? But Casey Coates? Hey, Casey Coates, do you know how well hentai comics sell compared to Marvel and DC comics? No! Well, here you go! Oh my god! What was that about aged well? You have been blocked from following so-and-so on Twitter. Boom! Right? They don't like it when they're wrong. But I would say hentai comics...
Well, the bad part is they're so dumb they think they're right.
Yeah, like, yeah, they're so dumb they think they're right.
Google, and then you got how many millions of pages? Oh, that's fucking hot.
That's fucking great.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
It looks like... Raging Golden Eagle did a cover similar to that. You know, I bet it sold better than Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
Tack, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was on here as well, listening in. Playing the video game.
So I was going to ask, can you look up how much Blade Devil actually made? As far as the sales figures?
Let me check.
Yeah, anybody that has
the
access...
The Indiegogo one, right? Maybe?
Yeah, the Indiegogo one. Let's see how much it made.
And I'll share the link. It's in Australian dollars, so...
I'm getting ready to launch Blade Devil 2.
I know. So, Marvel's Blade sales Devil. Figures... And
we're talking Marvel. I thought...
Now I'm going to look up Marvel sales figures 2022, right? According to the data on the distribution of comic store sales, the total sales amounted to 38.8% of shares. And the second was DC with a 24.3%. That's barely a quarter. So what in the world sold more?
Yeah.
Let's see.
I have a guess.
Yeah, comic book shares.
Manga!
Well, let's...
Probably see. Demon Slayer.
Manga, yeah.
They had a new Demon Slayer got today.
Well, yeah.
It's probably been out, but it comes to
Walmart.
Let's
see. World... single issue... Okay, I'm trying to figure out. We have worldsrated.com. Okay. It's saying that Kodansha was 1.1% and Viz Media and Dark Horse is all that... But all others, 8.5%. It's trying to say that Marvel Comics is selling the most out of all of them. Let's see. They said Marvel Publishers over 40%, approximately 282 million of all comic sales in stores in the U.S., giving it the highest market share by a significant margin. I don't know, because I'm not seeing that.
Related sales. Another 100 million.
Okay, the revenue.
Gets
the peak revenue was 115.7 million in 2022. So that's how much they made. How much did Blade Devil make?
That's probably not much when you think
about
it.
Yeah, that's probably
country.
Not much when you think about it. But. Okay, so the Blade Devil made. We're going to look that up right now. They made. Probably not that much, but...
Well...
It says they made $29,000?
Well, I mean, that's good for an independent...
Yeah, for an independent book, yeah. But, okay, so... I mean, even so, I mean, you gotta look up... manga sales 2022. Let me just look. All right, so 10 wow. best selling. What is the most selling manga sales?
This kind of looks like
it is from it FRMGM is no, this is Battletoads.
Oh, well, I know.
Yeah, I know.
But it looks like that's the guy.
U.S. manga sales. This is from Retard Era, though. Viz with 60% of the market. Kodansha with 14% of the market. And they sold 29,593,184 units for a value of $438,873,124. Good God. So if Marvel made $115 million, manga has made $438 million. That's three times what Marvel made. So there you go. And they're trying to tell me that hentai manga are, for some odd reason, out of... They've aged poorly and they don't work. Even though they're selling three times as much with, I'm sure, there's risque covers. I haven't read much manga, but I'm pretty sure that you guys who have read manga can say, yeah, there's some pretty risque covers and risque shit in some of the manga.
Oh, some of the artwork's just amazing.
I mean, I'd be surprised if there wasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Number 7, Invincible Iron Man 1, variant 2016. Okay, variant covers have allowed many artists to contribute their visions of characters to a broad audience. However, some are more successful than others. When Marvel published a variant cover for Invincible Iron Man featuring Riri Williams, drawn by J. Scott Campbell, it provoked an immediate backlash from fans. The cover portrayed the 15-year-old Ironheart as an inappropriately sexualized adult in a seductive pose. In response, Marvel pulled the issue from shelves and drew a more age-appropriate rendition of the hero for the following issue. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't look... I mean, maybe there's some curves?
What? So is...
That was considered too sexual for Marvel.
Is she supposed to be underage?
She's 15.
Over 15? I mean...
I see where they're coming from.
Year-olds wear waves.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Stuff than that.
I know. Even in the store, we see just the craziest shit.
Yeah, I've seen grown people wear stuff they shouldn't.
Oh, I know. But like, I think it's even worse when it's kids.
Yeah, the transgenders in this town.
Because I really
put
don't
no
think.
Into looking
I think it. I think it falls on the parents if you let your kids wear things like that. I mean, and when they're adults, I mean, go ham, do whatever you want. But when you're a kid, as a parent, or excuse me, not when you're a kid, but when you're a parent and you have a kid, you say, no, you're gonna march up those stairs, young lady, and put something respectable on. You're not gonna walk out like
dad
that.
Dad dressed like the daughter, just
yeah, that was great.
No, you will use my pronouns, blah blah blah. Yeah, blah, and said by the next day she was back to dressing normal.
Yep, that's how you do it.
Yeah,
Marvel said, you know what you do? Yeah, here's what you do. If your daughter wants to go out wearing something slutty,
you
dress equally. She said, you know what? If we're going to both dress like that, then let's do it together. And then you put on a freaking, you go up there, you put on your wife's,
her Wednesday night fuck session
Her Wednesday clothes, and you go out there, and you're like, okay, honey, let's go. And she'd be like, Dad, you're going to wear that? Sure, you're wearing that. Why can't I wear this?
You know
what? And she'd be like, I can't go out like that.
It's like business time.
It's like, you can't go, why? What? It's like now you know how I feel. I can't go out.
A godless whore.
I can't go out as a respectable father when my daughter is wearing clothes like that. So if you can't go out with me like that, then you gotta imagine how I feel. I mean, that's how you do it. And you're like, Okay, I'll put on something else.
You don't have to dress like those whores that I cheat on your mom with for my attention. You're my daughter.
Marvel number 6, 2003. I've never even heard of this. Marvel was widely panned by critics as one of the worst Marvel comic book series of all time. Holy shit. The company launched the series as a satire of superhero books during a Marvel marketing promotion and involved a convoluted plot concerning time travel. Man, I'm going to have to hunt this down because it's probably terrible and we should probably cover it.
Yeah.
The series also employed incredibly sexualized images of women on many of its covers. Really?
What about the worst comic in history? You're like, I gotta cover this.
Yeah! The cover of Marvel number 6, created by Greg Horn, portrayed an almost naked Mary Jane Watson swinging on a rope made from Spider-Man's webbing, looking uncharacteristically vacant.
Yeah.
The sexually charged images failed to draw in readers, and the series was canceled after only 7 issues.
But honestly, if they're the ones saying it's a horrible series, it was probably really good.
Wait, that's a bad thing? That cover?
Yeah.
Wait, let me see.
They consider that cover, which you probably want to draw now.
I kind of want, just for my...
Yeah, just for your collection.
Collection of... Yeah. Oh, man. And I always... Oh, Mary Jane, that's something about a good old redhead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why I covered that Red Sonja.
You know what they say about redheads, just blondes that ain't.
Don't forget, there's a Red Sonja sale. Humble Bundle. $18 for not only the classic Marvel shit, they reprinted it, but they also got all of Volume 5, which is not drawn by DeConnick. They got some dudes to write for her again.
Dudes.
And it's actually, it's actually pretty good. You get 1 to 28, which is the complete Volume 5, and you get all the issues where she did a crossover with Vampirella. And by the way, Red Sonja and Vampirella are both wearing their classic uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
So after all this fucking time and reboots, they finally went back to what worked. And by the way, $18, yes, there's still some DeConnick shit in there, but you get pretty much everything. And I said it's less than the price of a paperback. You might pay $20 for a paperback. No, I'm talking about at the comic shop.
I'm hearing the random people playing.
Somebody mute.
The milk carton for... Yeah, toss this ring.
Somebody mute. I'm hearing plates clanging and things. Lurker?
Lurker the plate clanger.
The plate clanger.
Lurker's gonna lurk.
He's gonna lurk. Okay.
Lurker's gotta lurk.
So, Fantastic Four, number 375, 1993. This is number 5. Many comic book covers age poorly due to changing social values, and some simply reflect an aesthetic that's fallen out of favor. This cover for Fantastic Four 375, drawn by Paul Ryan, reflects a lot of comic book trends from the early 90s, which relied on gimmicks. For a time in the 90s, comic shop shelves were full of covers using foil or holograms to make them look valuable and collectible. 375 added enormous shoulder pads, random military jackets, and absurdly large guns that were also in style for comics at the time. The result is a dated relic of its era. I don't know. I don't have any problem with it. I think it looks pretty fucking cool.
Oh, if anything, it really makes it more interesting to read.
Yeah, it looks cool. All these people have guns on the front cover.
Oh,
that's pretty badass.
Yeah, bikinis. That makes me want to read it.
Yeah.
Even though I just wasn't ever just a huge Fantastic Four fan. I like the cartoon series. I like some of their comics. But... I mean, I was more of, it would have been Spider-Man, Batman, Deadpool later on, and, I mean, Hulk and Wolverine.
And of course we have Iron Man 128, Demon in a Bottle. This is a classic cover. Now, unfortunately, my archive cuts off here. Like, it literally cuts off at this point. I don't know how or why, but my archive cut off. So, let me go find the damn article again.
And the thing, they're talking about women dressing scandally while they're over there doing storybook time dressed as women waving their genitals in kids' faces. Drag shows.
So, we've got Iron Man, alright, Demon in a Bottle on Iron Man 128 depicts Tony Stark's struggle with alcoholism. The arc follows Iron Man as he faces several mistakes due to his addiction and he tries to make amends. The story ends with Tony deciding to stay clean with Bethany Cade's help. Although 128 ends on a hopeful note, its cover is very dark. Tony Stark seems to have hit rock bottom, looking sweaty, confused, and shocked in front of the bottle. Thanks to MCU and the comics, Iron Man is incredibly popular with Marvel fans, so this image is difficult to digest. It has aged well, because what does it deal with? Alcoholism. And as somebody that has lived with somebody that had alcoholism, you know, my stepfather had alcoholism, you can see right here that alcoholism sucks. It sucks being a fucking alcoholic. And they even portrayed that in Iron Man 2 as a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, they covered it in the series.
So it's wrong to say, so what? Saying alcoholism is bad is now bad?
Yeah. If you're woke, if you're not woke enough, it is.
Now, Amazing Spider-Man, number 601, 2009. Mary Jane Watson has a tough role to play as Peter Parker's love interest. Readers can certainly empathize with the concern she feels when Spider-Man heads out to fight crime. However, some comics have taken it too far when showing her sadness. The cover for Amazing Spider-Man 601 by J. Scott Campbell reflects MJ's concern, but many readers took issue with the sexualized depiction of the anxious woman. Mary Jane's position on the sofa is contorted and unnatural, presumably to emphasize the curve of her hip and breasts where their arms are pushing forward. It was completely unnecessary. So let me... Okay.
Oh, was that the recent cover?
2009.
I think it. Oh. If it's the one I'm thinking. Oh, yeah. I love that one.
That's a good cover.
That's a very...
They said it's too... Oh, no. She's too... look. She wants to fuck Peter Parker.
Just because the people over there hate vagina. Oh,
she does.
Everyone else does.
And that is a smoking hot...
Oh, yeah. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
There's actually a cosplayer that looks exactly like that. It does that cover like that.
Yeah, but, and it's
and it doesn't look unnatural. She's doing it.
J. Scott Campbell did the cover. I'm like, damn.
Yep, they can't be happy.
And
that's why
number two. Oh, this is an awesome cover. Holy crap, fuck you, CBR, you fucking idiots. Spider-Woman number one variant, 2014. In 2014, Marvel gave Jessica Drew, aka Spider-Woman, a series of her own for the first time in 5 years. The series kicked off a multiversal adventure featuring other Spider-Heroes such as Silk, Spider-Girl, and Spider-Man Noir, and lasted 10 issues before Civil War II changed things around. Since superheroes are supposed to be in peak human condition, it isn't surprising that they often adhere to certain beauty standards. However, things can cross into awkward and sexualizing territory, what is what happened with Milo Manara's variant of Spider-Woman number one. Manara's art took it a bit far with Jessica Drew's body proportions. At a time and age where body positivity, being fat, but don't tell women they look like Lizzo, even though Lizzo is supposed to be the poster child for body positivity.
Good Lord, if you mean having a heart attack at an early age, if your goal is in your 20s, go ahead and do like Lizzo.
In a time and age where body positivity is important as it is now, there isn't space for this kind of cover. I wonder why all the Instagram models have lots of curves and they're skinny. You know, they've got hips and thighs.
I'll tell you why there's not space. There's a lot of fat women taking up all the air.
I'm just saying, there's all these Instagram girls that are, you know, definitely not the body positivity model.
No, they
and
don't.
And look at that.
Oh, yeah, that's hot.
Yeah, extremely hot. Like I can't believe Marvel did something like that.
Well.
Wow.
You know, it'll never end. That's the problem with wokeism is if they run out of things to be woke about, they'll just come up with something else, try to take another freedom.
And listen to this. Young Allies, number 8. This is the number one most awful comic cover, according to CBR. Young Allies. The Young Allies comics from the 1940s followed the adventures of Marvel's sidekicks, including Bucky Barnes and the Human Torch's pal, Toro. The young protagonists often face dangerous situations, and Young Allies number 8 is no exception. That said, a number of details on the cover have aged incredibly badly since its publication. It was 1943. The cover artwork, drawn by Alex Schomburg, features offensive stereotypes of Japanese people, which was common in propaganda at the time.
They ran out of things to cover. They covered that twice.
This cover takes it a step further, though, by portraying a black hero in an incredibly offensive style as well. Both renditions dehumanize the people in ways that are no longer welcome.
Let me check. I gotta see what this
is. Okay, hold on. Where's the... Oh my god!
Oh.
What? Wow! Oh wow! Yep, that was 1943 for you. Holy shit!
When you're smiling. Hold on, let me zoom in on this. Wow.
Yep!
Wow. Even better up close.
What?
Wow.
My god.
Yep, that was definitely the 40s.
That was the 40s.
I remember everyone was running hog wild, drinking shine, and...
Shine your shoes, boss!
That's what it looks like.
Lord have mercy. Yes, master.
Well,
oh, Lord.
Maybe not that far back. He does have a nice suit on.
I don't know. I know some of the guys we work with be like, I just say, yes, master. I was like, damn.
I would almost dare you to get just a comic, print this off, and put it like a book cover. And like, what are you reading? Oh, it's this new thing Marvel Comics put out. You talk about, you might have to run for your life. Like the guy at work talking about, it's too much black on black crime.
It's like, you want black on white crime?
I'm like, no, I don't agree with that. They already did black on Asian crime, and I didn't agree with that. Neither.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't agree with black on black crime, to be honest with you, but... If you're already doing that, don't try a different race to see if it works out better.
Right, absolutely. Oh man, so that one right there, I think we're gonna end it tonight for that one. Oh my god, that was just crazy. That was the laugh I needed. This person, they're probably fucking crying. Oh, I'm so glad these times are over, and I'm laughing my fucking ass off.
I cannot think of his name. He's an old black and white actor. He wasn't black and white, you know. Anyway, but he had a huge nose, and I cannot think of his name. But he's always like, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. And they even did a serial based off of him in the 80s. And it was a kind of alien-looking guy, or a guy with a big nose, and he talked like him, too.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and end it here. I hope you guys enjoyed this kind of longer version of the Grim Rant Show, and hopefully we'll be able to get, you know, more of these. You've got your new schedule starting pretty soon, and we'll see how that works out. We're going to try to bring content. We're going to continue. And again, guys, I'm going to continue to try to bring you 3 things. I'm going to try to bring you more comics.
Vulgarity.
More AVNs. Or, excuse me, the AVNs we already bring you. And I'm going to try to bring some more Arrowgate games. But I definitely want to bring more comics, because comics are getting popular. My YouTube channel is kind of going up. And I definitely want to cover more comics. Again, as I have said about 2 or 3 times, the people that write the comics are telling me they like my work. If you wrote the fucking thing and you're telling me you like my work narrating it, then I'm going to continue to do it.
Well, thanks.
So, yeah, that's like that's the biggest honor, to have the person that wrote the thing say, I really enjoyed you reading my comic. That's awesome.
Well, that's good.
That's great. So, at any rate, this is the Grim Lord, and I am out of here, and I'll see you next time on the Grim Rant Show.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.